Social Daily.
Welcome to Football Social Daily, your Premier League podcast from the Sport Social team. And on a Wednesday, a special guest interview with a former Premier League personality. And today, that personality is Manchester United and Celtic legend Brian McClair. We spoke to Brian last week for part one of the chat, where he was talking to us about Noel Gallagher washing his car for a couple of penguin biscuits, or blue ribbons as it turned out to be in the end. And we'll be hearing more from Brian very, very shortly about his time under Sir Alex Ferguson at Manchester United. And joining me to chat with Chocky, Marley Anderson and Joel Tudor. Joel, you were quite keen to ask him about one Eric Cantona, and it's quite poetic that the podcast is out today, because today is the, I think, 26th anniversary or something like that of Eric Cantona's kung fu kick against the Crystal Palace fan.
I know, as a United fan, I think everyone's probably screaming at me to just ask the right questions, and I wanted to know what the hell was going on with that, what the reaction was in the dressing room, if they even still liked him after it. And yeah, he gave some pretty convincing and pretty incredible answers about what the aftermath of that was. But 26 years ago, that's crazy.
Yeah, I might even be 27 actually now, thinking about it. My maths isn't great, but it's definitely an anniversary today
of something
of it, you know, of Eric Cantona's kung fu kick. Speaking of the Eric Cantona situation, he actually assisted Cantona for that really famous chip that he scored, you know, with the popped collar and all the rest of it. So yep. Even if you take Chocky's goals out of it, he's been involved in some pretty iconic Man United moments over his lifetime.
You don't realise until everyone's seen that chip, everyone's seen David Beckham's goal and McClair assisted, you know, the pair of them. So it's one of them where you go, oh, what, you were, like, first you go, oh, you were playing in that game. Then you go, oh, right, oh, fair enough. Like, you just learn something every day. But it's one of them, we didn't have to give him any leads, did we, at all? Like, just little, do you remember this? And he's got like 5-6 anecdotes about it, and it's like you've never heard them before. So That's why he was a great guest, and that's why we had to split it over two parts as well.
Yeah, he's had so much to say. So we're going to hear part two from Chocky, including the time that he assisted David Beckham for that long-range goal against Wimbledon, and the fact that he didn't actually think Bex was that good a player when he first saw him. Interesting story. And who can forget the big scrap he had with Nigel Winterburn as well. Loads of good stuff to come here on Football Social Daily. So without further ado, here's the rest of our chat with Brian McClair.
I know you're talking about dressing rooms. I know there was a big polarising figure, Roy Keane, who joined in 93 while you were there, and then he became captain 4 years later. Was there any signs when he first joined that he had captain material, or was there any like presence that he was building in the dressing room when he first arrived? Because 4 years is a short time to become captain.
I think, though, you see, though, that that's again the other brilliant thing about Alex Ferguson. His recruitment was fantastic. He made decisions. He always made a decision. You know, you could use the Jim Leighton won an FA Cup final as a prime example of that. I suppose Roy at the end of his career at Manchester United, and they stuck to those decisions, and they got more of them right than they got wrong. And he was a lucky bastard.
In what sense?
Well, you look at Barcelona '99. We got absolutely hammered, didn't we? Hammered.
Yeah.
And he comes away with the Champions League trophy, don't you? That has nothing to do with tactics. That's just fortune. But if you keep doing nice things, like nobody will publicise, he certainly won't publicise. He did a lot of nice things for a lot of people. He did a lot of charity stuff. He's always there to be listening to people. Roy, he again was one of those. He knew he was a good player. I mean, we used to have chats about, you know, who would you sign if you were, you know, and Roy was one of the ones who'd go, well, that keen at Forest, we'd have to be interested in him. You know, he's one of the ones that certainly remember talking to Robbo about, even although you know that he's going to be quite soon playing ahead of you, ahead of me, ahead of whoever else it was, you know. So when you could tell when he came in, he was a very strong-willed character. What I admire most about Roy is overcoming these demons with alcohol, you know. I think that's incredible that he's managed to do that. It's at some point there was a potential threat to certainly his football career, you know. And then I think he just grew into that kind of thing. And you can see how much it means to be part of the team with the Patrick Vieira incident, you know, with Gary Neville. Normally, Roy would be hitting Gary himself, you know. But you had again, they built a dressing room, built teams that were really strong characters, and we put demands on ourselves and we put demands on those young players, whoever it was that came in. Listen, we've been successful now. We wanted to continue to be successful. This is what you need to do. Mm. And there's been demands all the time. And they took over that and they put the demands on because they'd come through a really good apprenticeship with various different coaches at the football club. And if you're Bob, Alex Ferguson in particular, the demands were there every single day. And they got greater as they get more successful.
Speaking of characters, Roy Keane's clearly one. Another who's almost an icon more than he is a character is Eric Cantona. What was your relationship like with Eric?
Great. See, Eric, first of all, you get this thing. It's the same as anything, you know. You want to stay in the team as long as you can. I was in a situation where I could play badly in several positions. So I sometimes got to do that. You know, too much to my amusement as well. But when you're always going to think about how long is it going to last. You don't want to leave Manchester United when you're winning. You're doing, it's a great place to live. And suddenly you sign somebody like him, you think, oh, that's me, then. You know, that's your first impression. And you've heard all about Eric. You've been stories about him. You've seen different lots of bits and pieces. He's got the reputation on font terrible. He comes into the dressing room and he couldn't have been more respectful. He couldn't have been nicer and he couldn't have fitted in any better. And he fitted in brilliantly. He said lots of nice things publicly about a lot of the players in the dressing rooms and how immediately he'd felt comfortable in the dressing room and that he loved being there. And when you love and you feel comfortable and you're happy, your performances reflect that.
Who was your best mate at United? Did you have one? Was there anyone you could kind of lean on?
Lean on in what way?
Keep you up.
None of them understood.
Keep you standing on a night out.
You can see it time and time again. None of them didn't understand his sense of humour. 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 So yeah, they just not particularly. We all got on. We all got on, and we had great teams, good banter, and we stuck up for each other. Fergie did great when he's great. Team talks was, you should be happy he's playing today, you should be happy he's playing today, you should be happy he's playing today. Because if it not just in the game, if ever you need you, he'll be there, or he'll be there, and you might need to be there for him next week. Or I found that pretty inspiring.
Did Alex Ferguson's kind of image go up in the way in which he dealt with Eric Cantona after that incident with the fan in terms of him publicly really defending him, keeping him on?
Again,
how did you all view it in the dressing room?
Nah, you just realised that.
You must have been thinking, what the f*** is Eric doing kicking a fan?
I wasn't very pleased about it because I knew, my view was that if it had been any of the rest of us, we'd have got sacked.
So you think there's a bit of favouritism?
Yeah, clearly, but that's Harms, right? So you've just got to accept that. If you're a game changer, you just accept
get
that.
Get nine lives,
you
don't
have to accept it.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've got to change the game all the time. As soon as they stop doing that, then they have to move on. No, I wasn't best pleased about it, but I wasn't managing. You know, the manager dealt with the way he thought was the right thing to do, and it probably was the right thing to do for everyone. Yeah, but it certainly gives you something to talk about, really.
How about the dressing gossip? Was insane.
I didn't see it at the time because I couldn't believe it happened. And you know, and even though everybody was telling me that, I was like, it's not possible. You know, I did physics at uni. You know, I'm like, that's not. That defies
it doesn't compute right.
No, I didn't knock my head. It just didn't. You know, because it's like he's up here and he's down there. You know, and by the time looking here because you just got sent off, and you're concentrating the game because we're 1-0 down, and they hear a furore out with what's happening. You look round, and he's standing over. You know, and somebody's got hold of him. And then at the end of the game, and I'm like, that's not happened, you know. And we ended up, Crystal Palace was one of the worst places to get back from. See, you at home late, early hours in the morning, you know. And my missus had videoed the game. So it's just unbelievable, you know. So it did happen then. I just kept watching it, kept rewinding it and just going, that's just
can't believe that happened.
It is mental, isn't it?
And you're like, what did they say to him? You know, what you think? What did they say? This guy say? I mean, you always, you say, there's plenty of times where you thought, like, get involved with fans, sometimes your own fans, you know, but. Was it Patrice Evra that did that, wasn't it?
Yes, it was at Marseille. Yeah.
Sometimes, but you just usually you just kind of get by the time you just kind of go, oh, no, you can't be doing that, you know. But Eric, he was a great lad, and he was a cracking lad, and he didn't deserve everything he got for that, you know. So maybe part of the fact because it was Eric Cantona that it was dealt in such a fashion, because I mean, he got a custodial sentence for it at first. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, he goes down to Croydon Court with Morris Watkins, who's defending him, and that was his first mistake, because Morris has never won a case.
He was signed to.
Never won a case. Morris. And he got a custodial sentence. So it was like he'd gone down there, and he just downstairs and away in the back of a van. And he had, I don't know how long he was in there before he got bail. And then the second one, he got 9 months community service, I think. And then the FA hammered him after that as well. But then, you know, it gives like those grandiose returns culminating in the cup final, isn't it? So, great story for him and a great story for Manchester United.
You spoke about Paul Scholes earlier. David Beckham, Gary Neville too. So what were your first impressions of that class of 92 crop that we talked about?
As I said, that Gary was a steady player. He had a long throw. Yeah, he did a long throw. Because Gary Parcell got a for it.
Really?
Yeah. Do you not know he's a long throw? Well, am I supposed to know he's got a long throw? I didn't see him playing, you know. Like, so he got a ball. So he's steady, Gary. So always for me, see, Gary was decent enough, athletic. Nicky Bott, good player. Very good player. Scholes, a little genius. David, I'd been in and out of the team, so I'd played quite a number of games in the reserves, and I'd also been training a bit with the reserves. And all that David seemed to want to do was hit the ball 60 yards from right to left, often straight out of the pitch. And I was just frustrated about this, you know. And I think, what are you doing? Just pass it to somebody, you know. And I believe that if Preston could have scraped up the money, because he went on loan to Preston, I think Preston Moisey was the manager, I think, or assistant. If they scraped up the money, I think they'd have sold them to Preston. So that's how, again, how sometimes a lot of things. I could just for me, I couldn't see a player for what I was looking for. I couldn't.
Were you the least impressed with him out of the crop of
players? At the time, yeah. As in the reserves, I wasn't.
It's funny, though. You talk about sliding doors, and we're hoping that we can get Ben Thornley on the show at some point. A lot of people say Ben was the best of the class of 92, but got injured and never got a chance.
Yeah, I played with Ben, and I played in the game. He got injured, which was tragic, really, you know. But that's what happened to Ben, you know. He got a bad tackle, got a cruciate knee injury. But Ben was another one. The other guys, again, it was a pretty impressive crop of players who were in that. And again, as you said, sliding doors, you know. But David, went on, worked hard. And I think one of the benefits one of the big benefits for Gary was he worked hard at doing the simple things. Guys was quite quick and he was a decent tackler and he had a long throw. But he just passed the ball to David and passed the ball to Roy Keane. Passed the ball to David, passed it and made sure he just... And then it's a lot of, they'd overlap and then they started getting a bit better at crossing the ball. So I think that having David and Roy as the ones to pass the ball forward to, it was a great advantage for Gary, you know. And he went on to just be consistent at that. So got really good at simple things. Well, relatively simple things. Pass the ball to somebody with the same colour of shirt and move.
It's a simple
game.
Simple
game.
You scored, obviously, well over 100 goals for Manchester United. Do you have a favourite? Because when we were looking at research for this show, we found what I think it's called on YouTube, the greatest Manchester United goal of all time. And I think
it goes viral every few weeks, it seems. And it's usually from a United historian. And it's like, do you remember when Brian McClair scored the greatest goal in football history, and it's the scramble, the Royal Rumble that ends with you tapping it in against who was it against?
Sheffield Wednesday.
Was it Wednesday? Was it? yeah. So, with the plan was to show you that and talk us through it. But
there's yeah, and as during their lockdown, there was a video of that where there's no ball in it. And it's even more ludicrous when there's no ball in it because you don't quite work out exactly what's happening. I can't remember what the music was in it, but it is Benny really Hill. Funny because you're like, what's he doing there? What's he doing? It's got to be all of 5 centimetres I tap it in from, yeah. Something like that, you know, which is just, it's one of those when you,
they all
you,
count.
You always like to, I always kind of like to be around about there. Because usually that's when most goals are scored, you know. So I just keep to hang around, just got to hang around, hoping, you know. And then yeah. What's one of those that just dropped, and you go, you feel it stopping it on the line,
and running
back
away.
In your Scotland day, stop it on the line and roll it over, you know. Yeah. But you know that see, the one of the reasons why you didn't do that as a professional is it's disrespectful. But you know that there's a possibility the manager would just take you off for doing it,
yeah,
and you might never play again, or you certainly get a row for it.
So. What would be your favourite then, if you had to choose?
I don't have a favourite goal or a favourite game because the older you get, you appreciate that sometimes. I've never scored a bad goal, right? There's no like you talk about that going, be like, oh, what a terrible goal that was.
Yeah,
it's not a bad goal. It's a goal and it gives you the same kind of pleasure. Really,
they all count, yeah.
I know you assisted two very, very good goals as well.
That's our cliche bell, by the way. So. No goal is a bad goal, and they all count, so there's two cliches in there.
I could go with loads of cliches. I used to avoid them.
I'll be ringing this bell.
I used to avoid them. That's why I ended up nearly getting punched in the bar in Spain, you know. So. I did my best there. I used to change them around, you know.
Obviously, you ended up becoming a midfielder, which is what you started as you
described.
Yeah,
I'd say that I was a little adapter. I could be played badly anywhere, you know. And often, you even find yourself in situations you think, "What am I doing here?" You know. And I suppose that's it. Again, it's a nice kind of thing that the manager trusts you to not be absolutely diabolical in the position, you know. Because I got brought on at half time against Juventus in the Champions League because he'd fallen out with Giggsy. I did an argument, and Giggsy said something, so you can get off, you know. And I wasn't really paying him. They said something, I'm sure they said my name, and I was like, she said my name there. You know? You're getting on. What? Where am I playing? Giggs is off. I'm like, left wing, against Juventus. They've been their ground.
They didn't have a bad
and
team.
I'm playing against Conte.
Did he have hair at the time?
He didn't look any like he looks now. And they had strands, that's what he had, but he's a really good player. And the right back was this lad called Pesotto, who was really quick. I think I went mad. I just caught the ball, passed it to a red shirt and moved around a bit. That's
the Gary Neville.
That's what I did. I'm not running away from any of these people, you know. Certainly not on the left hand side. So just go. And they scored in injury time. I'm sure it was like he was offside. He was always offside, but he scored in injury time. Lost 1-0. But
wasn't it Fergie who said he was born offside? That lad, wasn't he, Inzaghi?
Yeah, he was born offside. He wasn't a great football player, but he scored goals.
Very limited, yeah. Just a goal scorer. But he always knew where to be. He was one of them.
No goal's a bad goal. There you go. No goals are a bad goal. Right, we've got a video in front of you there, Brian. Obviously, if you're listening to the podcast, you won't be able to see this, so I will describe it to you. Brian.
Are you going to describe this?
I'm not going to. I'm going to describe the game, and I'm going to describe kind of what happens. But
put the link on our socials.
But Brian was telling us before the podcast that he's never been sent off in his career, but he probably should have been here.
Ever since I started playing football at 9 years of age.
So what, you played 500 or something league games and you never got sent off?
Well,
that's unbelievable. Anyway, so this is against Arsenal, and Dennis Irwin, your teammate, the Irish fullback, gets cleaned out by Nigel Winterburn. Bad tackle, and you just go flying over to him, and then it all kicks off. There's about a 20-man brawl. So what do you remember of this?
What happened was it was a poor challenge by Nigel. He could have hurt Dennis, and I was right next to the incident, and Nigel then thrust his back against my foot twice, as you can clearly see there, although in this one you've played it the wrong way around and it looks as though I've kicked him twice. But you, Evan, you'll always get situations where you go into the red zone where you've just completely lost it. Mm. And at that split second, it was in the, and I can't explain at all. All our players, going back to that thing, you'd be happy he's playing today. They could say the same thing because they all rushed in to support Nigel. Nigel was lying on still on the ground the whole way through this. I don't think he got up at all, you know. And there's people not throwing any punches, but pushing and all. Oh, there was a punch. Anders Lindbergh, a sneaky little bastard, came round behind and punched me in the ear, resulting in 2 stitches immediately after.
Did it carry on in the tunnel?
No.
No pizzas were thrown on that occasion.
We'd had enough of that. But. And then I thought, I'm going to get sent off. No question. I can't be staying on after doing that. The referee had stepped away. And then when it all calmed down, he came over and he booked Nigel Winterburn and play on.
Were you thinking that I'm getting a hairdryer here? That's what you would have been thinking.
Well, we lost 1-0 anyway, so you knew you were getting it anyway. So I did go into training ground the next day, and I went in and Archie Knox and the manager are sitting there, and I said, look, oh, you got to find me, you know. And Archie just went like that, what the f*** possessed you, you know, he's f***ing himself, you know, it's just because he's seen me playing several times.
You don't tend like to that. Get angry at all,
I
then?
I don't like that, but it just, everything again, you get into the red zone, and for that moment, I was in the red zone, and Nigel got it. But we'd had a little bit of history, me and Nigel, eh? We'd had an incident the year before.
Bit of blood in there.
I spoke to him. He did the podcast, so we...
Yes.
It's just one of those events, you know, there's no malice out of that. But the year before, yeah, there was an incident there where I'm shaking him like a rag doll. He was pretending to be knocked out.
We need to find these.
Yeah, there is a year before, yeah, but I'll be there because it's the same thing. He caught him out of the corner of my eye. He was rushing, charging straight into a tackle. I don't know, he just didn't like me. It's one of those things. I mean, players he just didn't like for whatever reason. And I turned and I caught him on my shoulder and he fell and I knew he was knocked out, but I just picked him up and I was shaking him like that. And he's shaking little arms and the legs and going all over the place. And I thought, there's 44,000 people watching me here. Never mind the television. And I just let him go and he hit the ground with a satisfying thud. And then the year after, we had the pleasure of going to Highbury when they'd won the league and give him a guard of honour. And I said, I went up to him before the game and I said, Nigel, let's shake hands on this. It's before somebody gets hurt. That was it, done.
There was two things that got me about this. So firstly, I was looking for the scrappy goal. So I typed in YouTube, typed in Brian McClair, and I was expecting it to say Brian McClair highlights, Brian McClair scrappy goal, and then the other things that you get when YouTube tries to guess what you're about to type. But the third result was Brian McClair, Nigel Winterburn tackle. So I was like, oh, what's this? Because I'd forgot about it. I'd seen it before, but it escaped my memory. And then obviously I watched it.
My Manchester United career can be edited into 4 events. Missed the penalty and an FA Cup tie at Highbury.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was the worst penalty that's seen until Bruno Fernandes' recent one at Stretford End. 20-man brawl, passing the ball to Cantona, 1-2 with Cantona. Made the mistake of passing the ball to David Beckham when he shot from the halfway line.
Well, that ties in perfectly to it. He's always trying the hard thing, and then that one time.
But the thing is, this is again another. I'm a sub. The manager tells me, go on, settle the game, get settled down, don't be doing, get them, can them down, and all that. Play out the game. So we're in comfortable possession and just inside our half. I've got the ball. There's David. I'll just roll the ball. I'll move to the other side. He can pass it back to me and then I can pass it around here. And I knew what he was going to do. Because I'm thinking, oh, he's going to shoot here. I can just tell the way he's set up. I'm going to get this because I've given him the ball. He's told me. I'm thinking he's going to kill me. He's told me to calm everyone down. He's shooting from inside our own half. And so I'm right behind him. That's why I jumped on his back. So I'm right behind him, and I know he's set up for just to do it. He hits it, and I'm thinking, that's not bad, that.
You're ready to give him
and
a
you're watching bump. The goalkeeper. And then we always had a great support there, and you can tell by the people jumping up behind the goals that it's scored, right? It's gone in.
Yeah.
And all I can think about was Scottish goalkeeper.
Neil Sullivan, wasn't it? Yeah,
Neil Sullivan, yeah. I was thinking, and I'm going to get a ball. He's not getting praise for scoring from halfway line. He's got, I'm going to get a ball kick for not keeping the game tight, you know. So that was, and I said, I jump on his back. And that's, so you see me, and sometimes see me in ecstatic, and that's my whole career.
You spoke about Nigel Winterburn coming on the podcast. It's called Life with Brian. It's part of the Sports Social Podcast Network as well. How's that been going, and any other guests that you've had on lately that have been fun to speak to?
Everybody's been incredible. I mean, I'm surprised every time somebody says, well, when Matthew or Mark say, listen, can you, are you available for this? This person wants to do it. And then you've got... Recently, we had Michelle Rue Jr., who I knew was a Man United fan. You're like, that's just, I like to do a bit of cooking myself, you know. But not anything like as a professional, but he was great, you know. We just had the ex-boxing champion Anthony Crawler, and they're all different.
Big Red, isn't he? Big Man United.
They're all different.
Fan,
they're all good, and you just, every now and again, you just go, it's just, and they're all in different ways been brilliant. I think maybe the thing is that a lot of the people who, for whatever reason, volunteer, they like to talk anyway, you know. So you just, if you can find, I like doing what you've been doing, right? Those little things. I love finding things like that.
Yeah,
nothing better than, because I was never you get stitched up when you're a football player by the headlines a lot of the time. So you stop doing it. You stop talking to journalists. You stop talking. You just get.
Yeah.
For apologising, you know.
It and stuff,
aye,
yeah.
So I'd stopped all that, and then a lot of stuff going back to the shoot. It was not interesting. I don't like people to ask me some interesting things, some daft, like some of the things you're saying, you know. Like if you were ever in a band, you know, I'd love to be asking.
Well, maybe the next interview you might be asked the same question. We should make a fake Brian McClair.
It's like
the Brian McClair experience.
Brian Tarquin McClair.
Well, yeah, that was
the Tarquins. That's got to be a band already, hasn't it? Sure.
It's from Monty Python. That the actual sketch is called Upper Class Twit of the Year, and it's based around Mastermind. And I don't know what the other characters are called, but this character is called Tarquin Ole Fatang Biscuit Barrel.
I love Monty Python's brilliant.
Giving me his full title, you know.
Are you a Monty Python fan then? Because obviously
Life of Brian
is the film, isn't it? And Life with Brian is the podcast.
I loved it. It gave you that kind of thing. It was so, I mean, I would be kind of young kids, you know, so you didn't get to see a lot of these things that you could do now. Sit there and just get plugged in to the computer and just spend your whole life being plugged into it, laughing and watching different things. You had little bits of it. So you hear from older people, and I remember somebody bringing a book that was by their oldest brothers, and it's called Monty Python's Big Red Book, and it's blue. And in that is God's report card, and it's hilarious, you know. That's like when I'm saying about being funny and these kind of things, you've got something about Latin and needs to work on it, you know, things like that. Just stupid things that God would actually say, you know, and be parodied about it. And I just thought, and then you see some of this stuff, and then I was at the age where when I went to see a double bill in the cinema. The first film was Blazing Saddles, which I'm sore laughing at. And then the second film was Monty Python, The Holy Grail. 4 hours of crying, laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
it's only a flesh wound.
I was, again, a young person when all the furore came out about The Life of Brian.
Yeah.
And all that getting banned and all that. So it was some things that go to be banned, you're going to go and see it, you know. And then just some of the things in that are just
that stoning scene,
you know?
In Life of Brian just cracks me up every time. Can't
and then,
stop laughing
and then
about that.
There was a slight possibility because they filmed The Meaning of Life in the Campsies of Hill, one of those scenes, and we were new about it, and we could have went up there and tried to get in as extras.
That would have been brilliant.
I didn't go, you know. So I know some people went, so.
All right. Well, you can check out the podcast on the Sports Social Podcast Network. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. It is called Life with Brian, so make sure you check it out. And you mentioned people stitching you up, and we're going to do exactly that because we have a challenge for all of our guests at the end of every episode, and that is the Football Social Daily Keepy Uppy Challenge. It's 60 seconds. You have to use this tiny size 2 we've got down there in the corner. I'm not sure you've brought appropriate footwear in today, Brian. Have you got some sort of boots on to, not football boots, but...
He's an ex-pro, there's no excuse.
So this is how the game works. I'm going to ask you some questions about your career. While you're doing it. No, I'm not kidding, honestly. So pick a spot in the studio. You can be as comfortable as you want, whether it's over there, here next to me, totally up to you. 60 seconds. Try and keep the ball up as often as you can. Answer a question at the same time. Every question you get right, you get a point. Every time you drop the ball, a point gets taken away. So I will start your timer on the ring of this bell. Start. What year were Brian McClare born in?
63.
How many league goals did Brian McClare score for Celtic?
127 or something.
Sorry,
99.
Who was your last game for Scotland against?
Estonia.
You supported Airdrieonians as a boy. What's their stadium called?
It's not called... Well, it's called various things. Broomfield, Shrewsbury, Excelsior.
Yeah, that counts. In 1988, you were the first United player to score 20 league goals since who?
George Best.
Which Brazilian side did you score a hat-trick against in pre-season in 1987?
Corinthians.
Atletico Mineiro. Name three of the other Scotsmen in the United squad when you signed for Manchester United.
Olsen, Gordon Strachan.
What year did you retire from football?
Arguably before I started.
1998 is correct. One more question. How much did Celtic buy you for in 1983?
75 or 90.
Think we
Depends
got
which paper you need.
Time. Well done, Brian. Good effort that. Brian got 8 right out of 10 questions, which I think is pretty good going, to be fair.
I'm impressed by that.
The
good thing is you're going to be the first one, so you're top already.
I'm doing something like this on Friday as well, so I'm going to be top on Friday as well.
I've got loads of questions here in case you just absolutely blitz through them. One of them was, who did you assist against Sunderland for a very famous Man United goal? Eric Cantona. Thanks so much for coming in and speaking to us. And don't forget, as we say, check out the Life with Brian podcast on all platforms and part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. Nice one, Brian. Good to see you. Thank you very much, mate. Awesome to hear from Brian McClare. What a character he is. And if you missed part one of the chat, just scroll back in the timeline and you'll be able to hear it. But loads of really cool stories from Chocky. And you can check out more from Brian on his podcast, Life with Brian, where he's been speaking to some former players that he used to cross paths with, as well as some celebrities of Manchester United persuasion, the likes of Michel Roux Jr. and Anthony Crolla, both featured on recent episodes. You can check it out on the Sports Social Podcast Network and wherever you find your podcasts. Next week on FSD, we're going to be talking to a former Wolves and West Ham player, Matt Jarvis, who's a big friend to us here on the show. And we'll be diving a little deeper into his story and his career in the game. So hit subscribe and that way you won't miss it. But that's it from us. We'll catch you next time.
Football Social Daily is a VoiceWorks sport production for the Sports Social Podcast Network.